The Ten Commandments. The Israelites had expected to reach the Promised Land in a short time, but it took 3 months just to arrive at the wilderness around Mount Sinai. It was in this country that Moses had cared for his father-in-law's sheep. Here he had seen a burning bush. Here God had spoken to him and told him to return to Egypt to free the Israelites. When Moses was able to get off by himself and listen to God, God told him that he would always care for the people of Israel if they obeyed his laws. And when Moses told this to the Israelites, they promised that they would obey, that they would try to do just what God commanded. Having won this promise from the people, Moses asked God to tell him what laws to set down for the people. This time, a strange message came to him. Moses learned that in 3 days, something would happen on Mount Sinai which would make the people realize the presence of God. Moses was to get the people ready for this event and was not to allow anyone to set foot on Mount Sinai or to touch it. When Moses returned to camp, he told the people to bathe and to wash all their clothes. He told them to keep themselves clean so that on the third day they would be ready to stand in the presence of the Lord. On the third day, the people were ready and waiting in the camp. Suddenly the sky was filled with lightning. There were loud claps of thunder. A thick cloud settled on Mount Sinai, and there was a sound like that of a great trumpet. Moses led his people out of camp to the foot of Mount Sinai. Then suddenly a great smoke rose from the mount as from a huge furnace, and the whole mountain seemed to be on fire. The people saw the mountain shake violently. The Israelites were frightened. They did not hear the voice of God in all this, but Moses did. When the quaking and trumpeting noise had passed, Moses told his people that God had sent them commandments written on 2 tablets of stone, commands or rules by which they should live. These are the 10 commandments which Moses gave to the Israelites. First, I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Second, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Third, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Fourth, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. Fifth, honor thy father and thy mother. Sixth, thou shalt not kill. Seventh, thou shalt not commit adultery. Eighth, thou shalt not steal. Ninth, thou shalt not bear false witness. 10th, thou shalt not covet. The Israelites agreed to keep God's word and obey these 10 commandments. David and Goliath. After David, the shepherd boy, had lived in the palace of King Saul as armor-bearer for a while, he had to leave and return to take care of his father's flocks. So he was not with King Saul at the time the king again led the Israelites to war against the Philistines. In getting ready for this battle, the Israelites pitched their tents on top of a mountain. The Philistines were camping on another mountain, and in between the two armies was a valley where they met in battle each day. One morning, as the Israelites were getting ready to go into battle, a giant named Goliath came out from the Philistine camp and called out in a great voice to the Israelites. This giant was nearly twice the size of any ordinary man, and he looked even bigger with his big brass helmet, his big coat of mail, and his heavy leggings of brass. He carried a big spear, and a man walked in front of him carrying a big shield. Everything about him was so big, the Israelites ran in terror when they saw him coming toward them. And not much wonder. He was over 9 feet tall. The giant Goliath stopped where he was and laughed. Don't run away, Israelites, he called. I have only come out to ask you to send a man to fight me. There is no need for the whole Philistine army to fight the whole Israelite army when everything can be settled by one of your men fighting against me. If your Israelite man kills me, the Philistines will become your slaves. But if I kill your man, you will all become our slaves. That's fair enough, isn't it? Just send a man to fight me. Goliath waited for the Israelites to send someone to fight him. But there was no one big enough, or strong enough, or brave enough to fight such a giant. So Goliath returned to the Philistine camp. But after that, He came out every morning and every evening to offer his challenge again. Meantime, David had been caring for his father's sheep and had not heard of the giant Goliath. Then one day his father told him he wanted David to go visit the three older brothers who were in Saul's army. Their mother had parched some corn which she wanted them to have. And Jess was anxious to know how they were getting along. David took the parched corn for his three oldest brothers and some cheese for the captain of their company and started out for the place where they were lining up to go into battle. Just as he found his brothers and was giving them the food which their mother had sent, the giant Goliath came out to roar his challenge. David was interested. He had never seen such a huge man. Saul's men ran when they saw him and pulled David along with them. David began to ask about Goliath. He was told that King Saul had offered a fine reward for anyone who would kill him. The man who killed the giant would receive great riches and would be allowed to marry the daughter of the king. When David's brothers learned that he was asking questions about the giant and about the reward for killing him, they were annoyed. "Surely, David," they said, "surely you don't think you could fight the giant Goliath." But others who saw that David was interested told King Saul about him. And the king said, "Bring the youth here." When David was brought before him, King Saul said, "They tell me you are interested in fighting the giant Goliath. Is this true? You are young and inexperienced, and the giant is twice your size."
"Nevertheless, I am interested in fighting the giant," said David. "As a shepherd, I've had some experience in fighting. A lion once attacked me, and a bear tried to kill me. With the help of God, I conquered each of them and killed them. And with the help of God, I will kill the giant Goliath and free the Israelites from the war with the Philistines."
King Saul liked David's confidence in God's power and decided to let him try fighting the giant. He knew that if David lost, the Israelites would become slaves of the Philistines. But King Saul was willing to trust in God. He gave David a helmet, a coat, and leggings of metal, just like those which Goliath had. But when David put them on and tried to walk in them, he felt awkward and uncomfortable.
"I'm not used to armor like this, King Saul," he said. "I'd rather go in my simple shepherd's clothing."
So, dressed as a simple shepherd boy, David started out to meet the giant. He walked down to a little brook of water and gathered 5 smooth stones, which he put in his shepherd's bag. Then he started toward the giant, his staff in one hand, his slingshot in the other. When the giant saw David coming toward him dressed as a shepherd, he was insulted.
"Am I a dog," he roared, "that you come to me with staves?"
A stave is a staff or stick. David kept right on, moving closer to the giant all the time. Finally, he called out to Goliath,
"You come to me with a sword and shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord."
David took one of the smooth stones out of his shepherd's bag. Without taking his eyes off Goliath, he placed the stone in his slingshot. Then, just as the giant was about to attack him, David aimed at the giant, hitting him on the forehead with his first try. Goliath fell to the ground. The armies were not near enough to know exactly what had happened. David ran to the fallen giant and stood above him to show that he had conquered Goliath. The Philistines, fearful that the Israelites would now make them their slaves, turned and ran. And David, who had fought and conquered the most terrifying giant of all times, was the hero of that day. Solomon judges wisely. King Solomon's wisdom brought him great fame. When people had arguments which no one else was able to settle, their cases were brought before King Solomon. He was known for being fair and just, as well as wise. One day, 2 women came before the king, one of them carrying a tiny baby. The woman without the baby was the one who did the talking. She told the king what their problem was.
"Oh, king," she said, "this woman and I have lived in the same house. While we were living together, a baby was born to me. 3 days later, a baby was born to her. We were the only ones in the house. No one else knew of the birth of our babies. No one else saw them either. This woman's baby died in the night. I was asleep with my child at my side when her baby died. She got up and took my baby from me and put her dead baby in my bed. And when I woke in the morning, I found her baby beside me and saw that it was not my own."
The woman holding the baby hugged the little one to her.
"What she says is not true," the woman cried. "This is my baby. It was her baby that died in the night." King Solomon had listened carefully. It was difficult to tell which woman was telling the truth. But he thought he knew a way to find out. "Bring me a sword," he said to one of his attendants. The man went out and came back with a sword, which he held before the king.
"Divide the child in two," said Solomon, "and give half to one and half to the other."
Now the woman who had done all the talking said, "I say you're right, King Solomon. Divide the child and give half to each of us."
"No, no," cried the woman who was holding the baby. "Please, oh, please, oh, king, do not kill the baby. Give him to this other woman if you must, but let him live."
The king smiled. He was pleased that it had been so easy for him to discover who the real mother was.
"Do not kill the child," he said, "nor divide it among these women. Let the woman who now holds the little one keep the baby. She who wanted the baby to live is the child's real mother."
So Solomon, in this simple way, decided this problem as he did so many others. He became famous all over the world because he was so wise.
Jonah and the Whale.
Jonah was a prophet. He preached to people and told them that if they did not obey God's laws, unhappiness would come upon them. Then one day, Jonah himself disobeyed God. God had told Jonah to go to the city of Nineveh and tell the people there to stop doing wrong. Usually, a prophet stayed in his own city and helped the people there. But Jonah was definitely told to go to Nineveh. Jonah didn't want to go to this wicked city. He felt sure the people there would be punished for their wrongdoing, and he felt they deserved to be punished. Why should he bother with them? And to get away from the Lord who was telling him to go to Nineveh, he decided to go off to Tarshish. When he arrived at the port of Joppa, Jonah was delighted to find a boat which would take him where he wanted to go. He paid his fare, went below, and fell asleep. The boat had not gone far when a great storm came up. The water became so rough the boat was nearly torn to pieces. The sailors threw the cargo overboard to lighten the ship. They prayed to their gods, each to his own. But the storm continued to rage, and it seemed certain the boat would sink. Finally, the shipmaster decided to waken Jonah.
"What do you mean by sleeping through this terrible storm?" he cried as he shook Jonah's shoulder. "Arise and call upon your God to save us."
Jonah went with the shipmaster, and when they reached the deck, the sailors suggested that they cast lots to see who had brought the evil of this storm upon them, and the lot fell upon Jonah. Then they all began to ask Jonah questions, trying to find out what he had done to bring them such bad luck or misfortune. He told them his name and said he was a prophet. Then he said,
"There is no question but what the evil of this storm has come because of me. For God told me to go to Nineveh to tell the people there to stop doing wrong. I didn't want to go and was running away from the Lord by going to Tarshish. The Lord has sent this storm to punish me for my disobedience."
"What can we do?" asked the shipmaster. "We will drown if this storm does not let up. What can we do to you so that the sea will become calm?"
"You will have to throw me overboard," said Jonah.
The shipmaster and his sailors did not like to do this. They decided to make one last effort to reach the shore, and they rowed with all their might. But they could make no headway against such stormy waters, so there seemed to be nothing left but to throw Jonah overboard. When Jonah was thrown into the sea, he sank way down, and he was sure he would drown. But suddenly, a big, big fish appeared, opened its big, big mouth, and swallowed Jonah whole. For 3 days, Jonah lived in the belly of the fish, and while he was there, he prayed.
"Dear God," he said, "I disobeyed you, and I deserve to be punished. I did not deserve to live. But when my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and the Lord heard my prayer. I am filled with joy and thanksgiving."
As Jonah prayed, God spoke to the big, big fish, and suddenly it opened up its mouth and coughed Jonah out, right onto the dry land. Now God spoke to Jonah a second time, telling him to go to Nineveh. And this time, Jonah obeyed. The Story of the Handwriting on the Wall.
Daniel was a young prince of Judah who had been captured and carried off to the land of Babylon when he was a boy.
But instead of worshiping idols as the people of Babylon did,
Daniel stayed true to God and grew to be very strong and wise. He became a prophet, a man who could tell the meaning of dreams, see into the future, and solve many riddles. One night, the king of Babylon, Belshazzar, was giving one of his many parties. Belshazzar was a wicked king and spent most of his time thinking only of himself and his own pleasures. The night of this party, King Belshazzar called his servants and said,
"The god the Hebrews worship mean nothing to me. Bring me the gold and silver cups that my father took from their temple. My guests and I will drink from them."
When his command was carried out, the king and his guests drank from the sacred cups to praise their own idols of brass, iron, wood, and stone. Just as they did this, the fingers of a man's hand suddenly appeared against the far wall of the room and began to write on it. King Belshazzar saw the fingers writing and was very frightened. He turned pale and began to shake so hard that his knees knocked together.
"What is this strange thing that is happening? What does the writing mean? Quickly, send for all of my advisors. Get the magicians, the astrologers. Get anyone who can tell me what the words mean."
But although the wise men of his court tried, not a single one could tell King Belshazzar what the writing on the wall meant. The king was quite upset.
"I must find out. I'll give a reward of a purple coat, a necklace of gold, and a third of my kingdom to anyone who can tell me the answer."
Then the queen went to King Belshazzar and said, "O king, there is a man here in Babylon who used to counsel your father wisely and well. They say he is a prophet, and one who knows the meaning of dreams and the answers to many questions. His name is Daniel."
"Let him be called," said the king.
When Daniel was brought to the court and looked at the writing upon the wall,
he hated to tell King Belshazzar what it meant.
At last he said, "This brings you bad news. You have worshipped idols. You have taken the silver and gold from God's temple and have drunk from these temple treasures to praise your idols. You have not honored God. And the handwriting on the wall says that God has numbered the days of your kingdom and finished it. You will no longer rule this land." Although the king gave Daniel the promised reward of a purple coat, a necklace of gold, and rule over one-third of the kingdom, he didn't really believe that Daniel could be right about the meaning of the words on the wall. But that very same night, King Belshazzar died, and the kingdom of Babylon was given to a new ruler. Daniel in the Lion's Den. The new king of Babylon, whose name was Darius, was very fond of the prophet Daniel and gave him a great deal of power in the land. In fact, he gave Daniel so much power that some of the princes and other important people in the king's court were jealous. They tried to think of a way to get rid of Daniel.
"But what can we do?" asked one. "Daniel never does anything wrong. I don't know how we can trap him into doing something that would make King Darius angry."
Then another courtier spoke up.
"I have a plan which may work. Daniel prays every day to God. Now, if we can get King Darius to sign a paper saying it is wrong to pray to anyone else but the king, we might have something against Daniel."
So they drew up a paper which said that for 30 days, no one should pray to anyone but the king. If anyone disobeyed this order, it would show he was not loyal to King Darius, and he would be thrown to the den of lions. King Darius was flattered by the honor his court wished to pay him, and he forgot how faithful Daniel was to God. So he signed the paper. Then Daniel's enemies watched to see what Daniel would do. Daniel paid no attention to the order. As usual, he went to an open window, knelt, and prayed to God 3 times a day. His enemies were delighted. They immediately reported him to King Darius. Now the king knew that Daniel had served him well and was not really disloyal. He saw now that he'd been tricked by Daniel's enemies. But the order could not be changed. Sadly, King Darius called Daniel before him.
"Daniel, my friend, I tried all day to think of some way to help you, but it is the law of the land that once I have signed an order, it cannot be changed. I must have you thrown into the den of lions. But may your God, whom you worship so faithfully, save you."
Then Daniel was led away and thrown into the lion's den. King Darius didn't eat or sleep that night. The lions were huge, hungry beasts, and the king was sure he would never see Daniel alive again. Even though there was little hope, early the next morning, the king hurried to the den of lions and called out, "Daniel! Daniel! Are you alive? Was your God able to save you from the lions?" To his great joy, the king heard Daniel answer,
"O king, live forever. God sent an angel to shut the lions' mouths. They have not hurt me. I am unharmed."
The king was delighted. He commanded that Daniel be taken out immediately, and that Daniel's enemies be thrown into the den instead. Then King Darius sent a new decree into all the land, saying,
"In every part of my kingdom, men are to tremble and fear the God of Daniel, for he is the living God. He has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. His kingdom shall not be destroyed, and he shall indeed rule forever."